Futuro Media and PRX, it's In the Thick. I'm Maria Hinojosa, and democracy survived.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela, reporting from his garage this week, and it's ITT Sound Off.
Whoa. So, Julio, first of all, I need to do a temperature check. How are you doing?
Yeah, you talked about roller coasters. It was one of those roller coaster rides that was actually quite fun and exhilarating. I wrote 15 posts for MSNBC.com, and I loved it, Maria. I was in a newsroom with all these other badass political journalists and bloggers, and I'm actually like, wow, this is what I love. This is why I'm a political geek. What about you?
Well, I have a cold,
so no.
I don't like that.
No.
I know, I got a cold. I feel, you know, nothing is really set, right? We still don't know. And we're recording this on Thursday because Friday we're going to be off. So there are lots of things that we still don't know, like, for example, control of the House and Senate. So that's
that kind of big things.
Just that kind of thing. But I feel invigorated. I'm also really ticked off at my colleagues because they talked about the red wave and we were always so circumspect, you know, and I think that they failed to see propaganda when it's right in front of them.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm feeling, because I have this cold, I'm like, because I really would love to just be celebrating the fact that young people turned out and that people came out, women. All right. So basically here's our recap before we get to our reflections.
Here's the Maria Hinojosa political In the Thick recap.
So in Ohio, which is really important in the country.
Yes.
Right. And that has a small but increasing number of Latino and Latina voters.
Mm.
The Republican Trump-backed candidate, J.D. Vance, the author, beat Tim Ryan for the Senate seat by a wider margin than expected. And again, here the Democratic leaders did not invest in Ryan on a large scale, which is interesting. One of my takeaways is that the Democratic Party does not realize that how in play they have to be. It's like, do not walk away from any state.
Right.
Interestingly, they did not walk away in Pennsylvania. And this is where the Trump-backed candidate Mehmet Oz lost the Senate seat to state Lieutenant Governor John Fetterman.
Yeah.
And as of Thursday afternoon, as we said, we still don't know who has control of the House and Senate. Republicans look like they are on track to take the House.
Okay.
The roller coaster remains because we're watching Arizona, Nevada, too close to call.
The Senate races.
Right, in the Senate races. And in Georgia, the Senate race between Democratic incumbent Raphael Warnock and Republican candidate Herschel Walker is headed to a runoff election on December 6th.
Oh, another Georgia runoff.
Another Georgia runoff. Now, both parties, remember, would need just two seats for control. So it's true, Julio, the roller coaster, the nail-biting remains, especially as we watch a state as complicated in terms of voting, voting rights, voting suppression as Georgia, right?
You're right. There's three races in the Senate still up for grabs. And either party, if they win two, they get control. So that's basically what it comes down to.
That's where we're at.
And let's just talk about, as my stepmother says, Florida.
Florida.
That's the way she says it. Welcome to Florida. Because all my family lives in, my Puerto Rican family lives in Florida. Governor Ron DeSantis literally was, you know, reelected and won handily.
Mm-hmm.
And I wrote about this for MSNBC. I said he's the most popular Florida politician going right now with Latinos, and everything that was predicted, it was a huge night for DeSantis. But there's a little bit of hope out of Orlando, out of where my dad's district.
And this is why the Democrats should not walk away from Florida. This is huge.
Never. Maxwell Alejandro Frost, 25 years old, won his House seat. It used to be Val Demings' House seat. She lost to Marco Rubio in the Senate. And Maxwell becomes the first Gen Z member of Congress.
Wow.
Afro-Latino.
Bravo.
He focused his campaign on gun violence. But then in Texas, Maria, Governor Greg Abbott kept his seat. I don't know what Beto O'Rourke is going to be doing after this. I mean, he's lost three times already. And this is the part where this one hit home because we've talked about this. Abbott even won the vote in Uvalde County. So
I don't know.
Any other states, other things?
I just want to say Uvalde. I still want to see the particulars because the reporting that I was hearing actually was that a lot of people were going to vote against Abbott because of Uvalde, but that the people who might do this actually would face or faced the challenge of voter suppression, of actually getting to the polls. So was their anger at Abbott enough to force them to kind of ride the difficulties of voting in Texas? Obviously not. But I think a big takeaway is that the Rio Grande Valley did not go solid red.
Nope. 2 out of 3 Democrats won the House and it did not go solid red.
This is a big story for me because, again,
yeah,
to the Democratic Party, do not walk away from these areas.
But you know what? I was going to say, focusing on the Rio Grande Valley again, I'm just going to be like, I wrote about this week. They could have swept that if they actually put money into
eso es lo que te digo.
A Latina progressive like Michelle Vallejo, who we've known since 2019. She was at the Live in the Thick in the Rio Grande Valley.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the fact that Latina women, if you look at the exit polls, Latina women actually outperformed Latino men by, I think it was several percentage points. Someone like Michelle Vallejo was the perfect Latina candidate, but there was so much emphasis on the Latina conservatives, right? That's a lost opportunity for Democrats. And I know they took 2 out of 3 districts in the Rio Grande Valley. The two men won. What a surprise. I'm really disappointed that Democrats didn't back Michelle Vallejo because they could have won that district if they... She's actually the future of the Democratic Party, in my opinion.
Correct. Correct. So I tweeted out something like, look, Joe Biden is an okay president. It's not like anybody's like, oh my God, Joe! You know, I was like, he's a middle of the road guy, but he lost fewer seats in a first midterm than all the presidents. Going back to Clinton, he lost fewer seats. In fact, George W. Bush gained a few seats because of 9/11. So if you think about that, Julio,
yes,
that a just kind of middle of the road guy was able to lose fewer seats after somebody like Obama or even Clinton.
Yeah.
It says to me, the message is that the country is actually much more blue than we are told or think. But the problem there is that the Democrats then might just be like, okay, whew, we got this. We don't have to work.
We escaped it. Yeah.
Yeah.
When in fact, Fetterman's a populist. He's a Bernie Sanders guy. That was a huge victory for progressives in Pennsylvania.
Correct.
And, you know, Fetterman is not a centrist. But the other thing I just want to add before we move on, Maria, Black women in the Senate, really disappointed in Democrats that Val Demings in Florida and Sherry Beasley in North Carolina both lost.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, Black women delivered the presidency.
Correct.
To Joe Biden and Kamala Harris, mm-hmm. you know, and other and Latinos and just, you know, other underrepresented communities. But I was thinking Sherry Beasley, you know, that's another good candidate. So I know Democrats are kind of saying, oh, it was a good night, but progressives were there and they played a difference in this. And it was a good night for Democrats. I was surprised.
I think there's that takeaway, right? It's a complicated takeaway for the Democrats.
Yeah.
But I did put this one up from the Wall Street Journal editorial board.
Ooh, okay.
Quote, a perfect record of electoral defeat. Trump has led Republicans into one political fiasco after another. Trump is the Republican Party's biggest loser.
Ooh.
Wall Street Journal opinion piece.
You're a loser.
And I think that that's kind of it. Like the guy is not, it's not happening. Hi, it's Maria Hinojosa, host of Latino USA. We all love great stories, and great stories are what we pride ourselves in delivering to you every week. Latino USA presents a mix of reporting on culture and politics, diverse voices, and coverage of current and emerging issues, featuring stories from the heart, stories that will make you think and maybe even inspire you. Listen to Latino USA on your favorite podcast app from PRX.
Let's move on to our next topic, which is the coverage.
The coverage.
You like the coverage. You see what we did there?
Yeah.
Right. There was a lot of focus leading up to the midterms on the quote unquote red wave.
The red wave.
The red wave.
Good evening, friends. We begin this hour with the Republican and pollster promised red wave that turned out to be more of a red wheeze.
What happened to the red wave, Congresswoman? The big red wave that was predicted has not happened yet, and the balance of power still hangs in the balance.
So did you hear the news? There was no red wave last night.
And we've been calling out legacy media outlets for this kind of coverage because it turns out all of the polling wasn't capturing the entire story. Democrats did indeed do better than expected, especially in the Midwest and in state legislatures. We've been clear about how mainstream media narratives can influence public perception. So hearing over and over that there was a, quote, red wave coming without informative context about the election, like the huge number of 2020 election liars. I know people say election deniers. They're election liars.
Right.
Deniers are a little bit, you know, you're a liar.
Right.
Right. All these election liars who are on the ballot. That was one thing of the context, or without really reaching out to voters all over the country. I mean, that can discourage folks from going out and voting, but still, it was a good night for Democrats. Maria, I know we've talked about this. I was texting you like mad during the last 2 days, being like, I can't wait to talk to you. I can't wait to talk to you. So break it down to me and Mana. Tell me what your thoughts about this red wave prediction.
You know, it's like the arsonist who goes and lights the house on fire and then puts on the fireman cap and comes to put out the fire and save the day. It's like the journalists fell for the propaganda of the red wave. It's propaganda.
Okay.
They put it out there. We were like, slow down, slow down. And then they have to go back. I love seeing the New York Times analyzing the red wave that wasn't. It's like, but you started the fire.
Yeah.
You started the fire and now you're trying to put it out. And I think that this is damaging for us as journalists writ large. I mean, I think that's why, frankly, dear listener, thank you so much for hitting play and listening to us. I've been out traveling the country a little bit more. And so when I do this, I hear people saying in the thick, in the thick, in the thick. Thank you.
Maria's travel story is about in the thick. I love it.
So, yeah, because we are more critical. We are not falling for the propaganda. One of the things that really, I don't know how you feel about this, the fact that Donald Trump would hold these rallies like in the last 2-3 days leading up, and that they would be playing those rallies at the same time that they were playing rallies from Obama. And it's like, they are not the same thing.
No.
They are not the same thing. Donald Trump is an alleged criminal, well, and et cetera. So, and I just kept thinking about the fact that our colleagues, again, continue to do just like, well, it's this and it's that.
The
and
what about,
the what aboutism and just giving everything equal time. And I think that what's incredible, really, and you know the data more than I do right now, but it looks like young people were just like, yeah, well, we don't care. We don't care if you're telling us that the red wave is happening. We're still going to come out. I think the whole issue of abortion, as you know.
Oh, yeah. Can I just say women and young people showed up
on the issue of abortion because it is very personal, right?
And I think it gets into this, and not to like, I know there was this analysis about white women supporting Trump. Remember all that?
Mm-hmm, yes.
There is something about the abortion issue that was totally underestimated. Two big points I want to make about this, Maria. Number one, Republicans went all in with immigration and crime, and you saw all those ads that were despicable. You know, here comes the invasion. Not an issue. Not an issue. And I actually would argue that young Latinos, or Latinos in general, were kind of like, oh, hell no, this is not going to be happening. So that's number one. Number two, in terms of this quote unquote red wave, what's being missed is, and I'm going to focus this on the Latinos and Latinos who voted.
Uh-huh.
We're missing the nuances and complexities. There was a lot of like Florida, 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 Latinos, but Latinos helped Fetterman and Shapiro in Pennsylvania.
Exactly.
They helped Whitmer in that big blue sweep in Michigan.
Michigan, which is, by the way, huge. Blue sweep in Michigan. It's huge.
New Mexico is blue right now. Latinos. Colorado with the governor, the senator, and, you know, Yadira Carabeo, who became the first Latina to represent a House district in Colorado in the history of the state of Colorado.
Also in Illinois, first Latina going to Congress.
But I'm just saying, you know, Arizona is still in play because of Latinos. Nevada could be in play for Cortez Masto, but I, you know, that's complicated. But this is the point. That narrative of, oh, Latinos are turning to the Republican Party is a bullshit narrative. And it's proven in the midterms. That was a bullshit narrative. And all you have to look at the Rio Grande Valley, I know it was two dudes, Henry Cuellar and Vicente Gonzalez, but Democrats showed up at the border. This whole notion of them turning over to Republicans is a little bit premature. And I actually,
correct.
Last thing I'll say, Maria, Pew and other studies have already said Latino Republicans actually do not agree with issues of guns and immigration with white Republicans. So I do think independents, Latino Republicans actually were like, I don't need this extremism. So that's it. I'm off my soapbox.
No, but the soapbox basically is you got to work your base.
Yeah.
And that brings us to the closing topic, right? Which is working the base by doing GOTV, which means get out the vote. So young people came out in huge numbers, and this helped decide key races in Pennsylvania, in Michigan, and Wisconsin, among others. Exit polls showed that younger voters voted for Democrats more than any other age group by 63%. I mean, that is
huge. And Maria, do you know 63, but you know what young Latinos did? They were at 68%.
Of young Latinos voting for Dems.
That's Obama-like numbers of 2012.
So it's really great to hear that, sort of, because at the same time, one, we're critical of the Democratic Party, but two, then it's just like they're going to be like, oh, see, we don't have to do anything. They come.
Yeah.
Anyway, and that's our big critique.
Don't get too comfortable. Correct.
Right. So Joe Biden, as I said, did lose fewer House seats in a first midterm election than former presidents Obama, Clinton, and Trump. And basically that data that I'm citing is based a lot on the turnout of young voters. In states where protecting abortion rights were on the ballot, those initiatives passed, also fueled by many young voters, women. In Michigan, where voters chose to protect abortion rights in the state's constitution, there was also the highest voter turnout ever for a midterm election. Michigan, very important state. Democratic Governor Gretchen Whitmer was reelected. And listen to this. Democrats took control of both chambers of the Michigan state legislature for the first time in 40 years.
Wow.
This is a state which, by the way, in the Democratic primaries of 1988,
yeah,
Jesse Jackson won Michigan when he was running for president.
Oh, man.
And then it went red.
You went to the Wayback Machine on that one.
The super Wayback, because he was
the 80s.
In the modern era, he was the first black man to run for president.
Yep.
So Sochi Nameka, who is director of the New York Working Families Party, spoke with Democracy Now!, friend of the pod, about the Democratic Party. Let's go to the tape.
There is a failed strategy, absolutely, the Democratic Party. And for us, we think it's a crisis of democracy, because unless you're actually engaging, recruiting, activating, and speaking to young voters, to voters of color, to voters in the city, you're leaving it up to consultants and the airwaves to battle for the hearts and minds of working people. That's a failed strategy. And now the Democratic Party really has to rethink what kind of party that they want to lead.
Hmm.
Yeah. So what do you think, Julio? Again, I think that much of the media, again, discounts young voters.
Oh, absolutely.
Is not in class with them like I am on a weekly basis. I think that it's really hard to poll. We know this, right? You've just did our first poll. It's hard to poll younger people and get those numbers.
Yeah.
What's your sense of what happened?
You know, it's interesting. I recall the earlier conversations we've had on In the Thick this year, those roundtables that appeared on Latino USA. And I was always struck by that conversation that we had with Maria Teresa Kumar, where she mentioned that the most common age of Latinos is 11 years old right now. So basically, the largest share of Latinos and Latinas in this country in terms of eligible voters are young people.
Super young.
So if you think about what's happening, everything that is being predicted that you have said for years and people have been saying recently is coming to fruition. We're starting to see young people mobilizing and realizing that issues like abortion, climate change, cost of living, all that really matters. And they showed up, right? So that's number one. And that youth is Latino and Latina as well. You can't separate the youth vote from the Latino and Latinas that are young. That's a given. And I think we're going to start seeing more and more of that. That to me is so critical, because you see Obama Latino-like numbers in these exit polls when it comes to young Latinos and Latinas. And people that were actually, you know, people in my generation, Generation X, as Latinos, are actually probably more independent-leaning, more right-leaning. That showed up in the exit polls as well. So Democrats are going to make a mistake if they assume that what they did, you know, play to the middle, cater to Republicans, cater to independents, that'll be a mistake, because I think part of the success, and especially, Maria, all the fact that there's going to be all these Latinos and Latinas who are historic firsts that are going to Congress. I think it's at least 7 right now, and there might even be another one. This is about political power and getting that representation. I think we're starting to see the beginning of all these predictions, Maria, that the next couple of decades are going to be really, really interesting in this country, and it's going to be Latino and Latina led.
That's it. Like our mantra has been, pay attention to this voting cohort. You must. And again, I'll just say, like I put on my Insta, Maxwell Alejandro Frost becoming the first Gen Z Afro-Cuban member of Congress from the middle of Florida. Eso puede ser el futuro. That could be the future.
Well, you know, Joe Biden called him.
Oh, he did? I didn't know that.
Joe Biden, during his little victory lap speech on Wednesday, specifically mentioned Maxwell Alejandro Frost.
Last night, I was pleased to call Maxwell Frost, the 25-year-old who got elected, I guess the youngest man ever elected to the United States Congress. And I told him that I was the first elected, the second youngest person ever elected to the United States Senate at 29, that I have no doubt he's off to an incredible start.
That to me was really interesting when he said that. Anyway.
So the politics get continually more interesting, and we're happy because people are engaged.
Exactly.
People are voting. Yeah. People are having these conversations.
And it's a midterm.
Yeah, and a midterm still in COVID where there's a lot of personal and outside challenges. People showed up. Democracy won. I'm Maria Hinojosa.
And I'm Julio Ricardo Varela.
Uno, dos, tres.
And remember, dear listener, go to Apple Podcasts to rate and review us. Also, you can listen to In the Thick on all major podcast platforms. Check us out on the web at inthethick.org. Follow us on Twitter and on Instagram at In the Thick Show. Like us on Facebook and tell your friends and family to listen. In the Thick is produced by Noor Saadi, Harshana Hatta, and our New York Women's Foundation Ignite fellow, Daniela Tello Garzon. Our editorial director is Fernanda Santos. Our audio engineering team is Stephanie LeBeau, Julia Caruso, Gabriela Baez, and JJ Rubin. Our marketing manager is Luis Luna, thanks to Raul Perez for recording me. The music you heard is courtesy of Nacional Captain ZZK Records. Dear listener, remember, no te vayas. Now more than ever, thank you for listening. Got a pep in your step because democracy is happening. Wee! Bye!
Democracy is happening. Wee! Quote Maria Hinojosa. Peace, y'all.
The opinions expressed by the guests and contributors in this podcast are their own and do not necessarily reflect the views of Futuro Media or its employees.